Beers with Chad. Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of Beers with Chad. We're here in Dallas, Texas, where we've been doing a podcast tour. We've recorded some really great episodes. I think the best episode we've ever had with Adam Nelson, a true personal hero of mine. We had L.S. McLean, Tim Swords, Jug Life Live at Arlington Strength, Josh Bryant, Scott Salwasser, the director of Speed and Power at Texas Tech for their football team, and then just finished up another Jug Life Live at D-Town CrossFit, which probably the nicest CrossFit, one of the nicest CrossFit gyms I've ever been in.
That place is beautiful. Air conditioning.
That was key. It's about 102 degrees in Dallas right now, so the air conditioning was key. And I'm joined, not as always, on Beers with Chad, but a special
guest,
special occasion today by Max. So happy to have him here. And also a special treat in the beer department, thanks to Preston Turner, who is a great USAPL IPF junior lifter, 540 bench in the 120s, when he's like 21 or 22 years old. And he has now turned into a weightlifter for Team Houston under Tim Swords. And Preston is a fan of the podcast and was kind enough to bring us a variety of some of Texas's finest micro brews. You can follow him at Presson Turner. You see what he did there? On Instagram, so go do that. Already turned into a very good weightlifter with only a year in the sport. Real nice guy, strong guy. So today we're drinking both, for right now at least, beers from Spindletap Brewery. I'm drinking Houston Haze IPA, and Max has a Spindletap 5% Tint Citra IPA. So yep. Cheers, my man. The audio people tell me they're always confused. Like, did it stop? The podcast is over there? So a couple weeks ago, I did the Mount Rushmore of powerlifting. And in that episode, I talked about, the way that the real Mount Rushmore, the presidents were decided on there. I used my history degree, a.k.a. Wikipedia, to find out that the presidents were chosen because they each represented a significant era or event in American history. So for the powerlifting Mount Rushmore, I did it the same way. I broke it into eras of powerlifting. I had the old-timer era, Don Reinhout, the golden era with Ed Cohen, the multiply era with Chuck, the flame beanie, Vogelpohl. Female powerlifting as a whole was represented by Jennifer Thompson, and then the modern era of powerlifting, our representative was Dan Green. And because people have been clamoring, email's been blowing up.
Your email's blowing up.
Not really, but we're going to do a weightlifting Mount Rushmore, and we're going to do two. We're actually going to do two Mount Rushmores in one episode. We're going to do an international powerlifting Mount Rushmore. And then as sort of a participation ribbon of Mount Rushmore's, we're going to also have an American weightlifting Mount Rushmore. So we're going to cover all our bases. So luckily Max, Team Juggernaut head weightlifting coach, is here to do that. So the first thing we need to talk about are the different eras of weightlifting. And weightlifting is an older sport than powerlifting. So we're going to go actually with six eras. Yes, I know that there's only four people on Mount Rushmore. But you know what? If Mount Rushmore was built today, they'd probably have five or six people. So we're working with a longer scope of history.
Where was the Declaration of Independence hidden? Which head in Mount Rushmore is it in?
Ask Nicolas Cage or something.
I wonder.
Or maybe
he would have been a more appropriate person. He probably knows more about Mount Rushmore than I do.
We could get Macaulay Culkin from Richie Rich to find that out, and they could use his laser that they were carving the Rich Mountain with.
Oh, right. Yeah. He was rich. He was very rich in that movie.
I have Googled before, how rich is Richie Rich?
Yeah, it's not as impressive.
Theoretically.
What was it, like $12
billion? No. If I remember correctly, it was really high. But we digress. Oh. All right. So we want to get into our eras. Our first era that we're going to talk about, we will call the old time era, and this is really about pre-modern technique. So this is when you have lifters split snatching, split cleaning. What are some other, you know, kind of defining characteristics of this time?
I mean, the it was just barely after World War II, so there really wasn't like a huge international, like, you know, presence, I guess. It was predominantly the U.S. Russia kind of came in after World War II, but a lot of the population was decimated, so it was a much smaller sport.
That's a crafty way for the U.S. to be good at weightlifting.
Well, that's our...
Decimate the rest of the world's population
kind
through
of our strategy.
That's brutal warfare.
That's our go-to move.
And so this is we're saying, up until... What about 19...
Early 60s, yeah. I would say, up until like the early 60s, before like the whole international community really like was... I mean, they were there, but before they really kind of stepped into the whole thing.
Yeah, they had other stuff to worry about.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, rebuilding their infrastructures and whatnot. So our representative in this, he's going on both Mount Rushmores, both the international... Yeah. Weightlifting and the American weightlifting Mount Rushmore. Our representative for this, you know, old time era of weightlifting is Tommy Kono. Tell us about Tommy Kono.
Tommy Kono was a 2-time Olympic gold medalist, 1-time silver, had about 21 world records. I would say he's the most, from my experience with international lifters too, he's the most recognized U.S. lifter, at least up until the last 5-10 years. He was just like this standout, you know, the sort of Klokov of his day, I think, to sum him up pretty much the most.
Yeah, and you know, with the kind of World War II historical context we've given in there, Tommy Kono was actually first introduced to weightlifting while interred in an internment camp by the U.S. government. You know, he was of Japanese descent, and he was sent to an internment camp in the Sacramento area for, I think, 3 or 4 years with his family, and that's when he was first exposed to weightlifting. So that's kind of a interesting...
Fun fact.
Yeah.
Not fun for him, but...
Yeah. It worked out. It worked out for him, I guess.
He did all right.
Who would be some other... maybe honorable mentions for this time period.
I would say Dave Shepard. So Dave Shepard was an American lifter, probably a middleweight, light, maybe even like a featherweight. He was kind of one of the first guys to popularize the squat style of lifting. Squat snatch, squat clean. Before that, people were doing split cleans and splot cleans and power cleans and stuff.
What was the second one? The splot?
Splot. You ever heard the splot? They say it's like halfway between a split and a squat.
Okay.
1 foot goes back, 1 foot might go back, who knows?
Kendrick Ferris kind of does that.
I think Kendrick Ferris is definitely it's a retro move for him. He's going back. But
all the hipsters are splot cleaning these days.
Shepard for sure would be in that category because he was really like popularizing that technique. But he was a little earlier.
What about Norbert Szymanski?
Szymanski, too. Szymanski still holds the world record, the official, if there is an official world record for something that doesn't exist, split snatch, 165 kilos as a super.
I also know that Norbert Szymanski, when he snatched 163, 165, something in that range, was the oldest person to ever hold a weightlifting world record. He was almost 39 years old.
Yeah.
So a month short of his 39th birthday.
Yeah. Well, with a name like Szymanski, he was probably born at 9 years old or, he was definitely, I think he competed in at least 4 Olympics and I think he medaled in all 4, not the same medal, but I believe he got a medal of some color in each one.
Yes. And it was 3 Olympics, then missed one and then came back to another one because of a back injury or something. So he fought in World War II. And then his weightlifting career was post-World War II and covered 24 years, to 24 years.
He was the definition of a fucking grizzled old, like, I mean, 24 years at that level. But in addition, because, you know, the technique was different. They split snatch. When you split snatch and split clean, the bar doesn't even touch your body. So, I mean, you imagine, like...
Well, that's where the name that clean came from, right? Is the bar had to stay... It had to stay clean.
Yeah, it had to stay clean of your body, yeah. So, I mean, that guy was just savage. I would say the only other guy probably honorable would be, like, Rudolf Plukfelder, who was David Riggert's coach. But he was another prominent split clean, split snatch guy. But obviously Soviet, so.
Those old pictures of those guys doing that super deep lunge to catch those, that's a pretty gnarly position.
Your groin would take such a beating.
You know, when I was like freshman, sophomore in high school, and we were being introduced to power cleans, we didn't really have much coaching, and my natural instinct was to split clean.
Yeah.
It's just kind of what happened. And I remember
Wesley Smith?
Yeah, that I split clean 110 during my sophomore year of high school. And people were much more impressed by my ability to lunge 110, which to me was really an afterthought, than the catching it part.
I don't think I've ever done a split clean, like, intentionally. But, I mean, I can't imagine it feels good on your hips. After, I mean, one thing I do know, I've been told from people that trained then that they would switch legs a lot.
Okay.
So they would do them one leg or the other. Some guys would. And the reason was because they kind of were expecting a groin injury. And so this was a way to, like, prepare them for, like, well, obviously once the left leg goes, I got to use my right. So they would kind of train both.
Prepared for the worst case scenario. Yeah. All right. So Tommy Kono is double Mount Rushmore for Tommy Kono, both on the American and the international weightlifting Mount Rushmores. So our next era we want to talk about is the three-lift era. And the three-lift era, so this we're talking about snatch, clean and jerk, clean and press.
Yeah.
Was it clean and jerk first or clean and press
clean
first?
Clean and press. Snatch, clean and jerk.
Clean and press, snatch, clean and jerk.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day. Yeah. So what years are we talking about here?
Well, this is obviously up, includes everything post the early Olympics in the early turn of the century, 1910s, 20s, up through 1972. So after 72, they got rid of the press.
But for our purposes, because we talked, Kono was up until about 60.
Yeah, so we're really talking about like, late 50s, early 60s through 72, but some of these guys obviously compete after that.
Yeah. And this is a proliferation of squat technique.
Yeah. Everyone at this point in time is doing squat technique. There might have been one, person here and there that maybe snagged a medal and split, but basically mid 60s and onward, it was all squat technique. Everyone had adopted the modern technique.
What about the equipment? Are they training metal plates, bumper plates?
So I believe I'm not mistaken, the first bumper plates started to pop up in the late 60s. Maybe it was the 1970. And that obviously had a big impact on the way people train because then you could drop the weights. So instead of having, prior to the bumper, people would lower the bar every rep.
And that's probably a lot of the reason why, when we post about some of these old lifters, like a Ken Patera, Joe Doobie, and people are so confused, like, how are their press and their jerk so close to each other, even identical in some cases. But since they were having to lower the bar every time, because if they were dropping metal plates from overhead, they would either have to
destroy the platform.
Destroy the platform and the equipment.
Yeah, it would be like the standard meets would go, the meets for one went forever. They were like SPF powerlifting meets. It'd be 15 hours of three lifts, drop, people would lower the weight, the rule was you'd lower the weight and then lower to the ground, but they would get to their shoulders and then to the waist and let go, and by the end of the meet the platforms would just be splinters, it'd just be destroyed. The reason guys were pressing as much as they jerked is because everyone would start training the same way. They would all start training to press first, so everybody pressed and did a shitload of presses, to bring that lift up, and that just killed everything for the snatch and the clean and jerk. So you just had this different type of training, much more power lifty kind of, a lot more strength work, a lot more focus on the press. It was always like, people basically focused on the press, the clean and press, and their jerk to kind of build the total. No one was really snatching big weights, not like today.
I was surprised to hear, to go back to the last era, Szymanski snatching in the mid-high 160s.
Yeah, that's impressive. Split snatch, too. That's a huge weight. I don't believe I've ever seen a video of someone doing a bigger split snatch. Not that I don't think someone like Salimi could do it.
If anyone could do it, Well, Lasha could do it. He's very coordinated.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all coordinated, but Misha could do it.
Oh, Misha. He may have. I wouldn't be surprised if Misha has done a bigger one.
Bars rotating at this point or no?
Yeah, bars started to rotate a little earlier than that. I don't know exactly the time frame of that, but bars were...
Not the lovely spin of today, though.
You don't have the Alico barbell. Yeah.
So, you know, we subbed in. I got a new one. The Carbach Brewing Company Rodeo Clown Double IPA. And it says get down with the clown on here, which, you know... If there's one drawback to having the company Juggernaut Train Systems and the Jug Life is that on rare occasions people will bring up Juggalos.
You mentioned it now. It may start something here.
The fan group of the Insane Clown Posse. The worst people who are the fans of the worst band. And for some reason I've had some overlap with this group. And the get down with the clown around the rim here just reminded me of those fucking bastard Juggalos. All right, but the Three Lift Era, our international representative, also on the Mount Rushmore for best singlets of all
hands
time.
Down.
Yeah,
hands it's actually down.
Just four. It's him from four different angles on that. is Vasily Alexiev.
Yep. Yeah, he's a 81-80 time world record, broken 80 world records, two-time Olympic champion, I think about 7 world championships, and I mean, he still holds the world record press, 236 and a half.
He also tricked Louis Simmons into thinking that the Russians did accommodating resistance because of that picture of him lifting weights in the water.
Yeah, no, he that's actually one of his claims to fame is tricking Louis Simmons into... Very true, yeah.
He was a troll ahead of his time.
I believe he actually was a huge troll. I've heard some amazing stories about Alexiev.
I've heard that Vasily Alexiev would eat a 36-egg omelet.
I've heard that,
too. Daily.
I mean... Are we accounting for inflation, the story inflation scenario, where like every year someone adds an egg to it?
But are we also accounting for what kind of little shitty eggs they probably had the Soviet Union
at
that
time? They were quail
eggs. Yeah.
It was almost equivalent of an American 3-egg omelet, but it was actually more just a... It was a very small kind
of No one can ever match America's fatness when it comes to breakfast.
Alexiev was probably the first man also to start the legless singlet movement. He started and ended it simultaneously by wearing a legless singlet.
full nips on his singlets too.
What if we found out later in let's say an old Soviet bunker or some historical document that actually he was like the Russians had made a normal singlet and he was like, no, cut that out. Cut this area out for me. And you find out that it was totally intentional. He wanted that.
His singlet was made of wool.
Oh, yeah.
How fucking uncomfortable would you be in a wool?
Well, because you're hot as shit here, but you're cold up here.
Maybe it's like when you're under the, you know, you're sleeping and you put one leg out from under the covers.
Very much that effect.
That two legs out, you're too cold. Both legs under, you're too hot. One leg out, it's just perfect. That if he would have had too much coverage in that wool singlet...
It's like thermometers. You could tell. You could like flick his nipple and see how cold he actually was. We're good. This is good. Accommodating resistance. We're solid. That's set for another 30 years of confusion in the West.
Alexiev, we have a strength history minute about that, so go check that out about Vasily Alexiev. And our three lift representative for the United States, also a strength history minute alumnus of Juggernaut. Which is, these guys should probably add that to their resume.
Yeah.
Put this on their Wikipedia. Been on the Jug Life Strength History Minute is the Doob.
Yep.
Joe Doobie, the last American male, congrats to Sarah Robles winning on the female side, the last American male to win a world championship.
Yeah, 1969. Not as vast a finish as Vasily, but he had a couple world records in the press. And then obviously was world champion and probably held a ton of American records. The owner of maybe one of the most incredible feats of squatting lore that we've heard.
Yeah. Well,
later to be confirmed.
Yes, it's been confirmed, though it was originally told to us as a story by John Bros as 770 for 17.
Potentially a 36 egg omelet scenario here, yeah, too.
It's so incomprehensible. But it has since been confirmed to me by Joe Duby on Facebook. We're Facebook friends. Shout out, Joe. What's up?
He's watching, I'm sure.
He may be. 710 for 12. While not 770 for 17, I can actually comprehend the number 710 for 12.
Yeah.
Is strong as shit.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. He would do it, right? Because Bros said he would do it because they did the three lifts back then, and meets took 42 hours to finish. So he was like, I need to build some endurance, so I'll just squat as much weight as I can for as much reps as I can. Which seems like a pretty bold,
and he was probably filling the bar at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
At 710 was the most he could put on the bar, so
yeah,
there was only one way to go from there, and it was more reps.
Yeah, that's what you do.
So that is our three-lift era. This is from about 60 through 72, even though, you know, Alexeyev was competing beyond that. So clean and press, snatch, clean and jerk. Vasily Alexeyev, Joe Duby, cheers to them. On the beer side of things, Houston Hayes IPA, fantastic. Rodeo Clown, not great. Max isn't much of an IPA guy. He's having to force his way through this.
It's challenging. It's still good.
I liked it.
It's all right.
All right, moving on to our next era. Our next era may be the most legendary, infamous, and that is what we will refer to as the free-for-all era. This is, you know, from the early 70s until 1988, maybe 92, you know, into the early 90s, and this is when there were steroids readily available throughout the world.
No out-of-competition testing.
No out-of-competition testing, and up until, 84?
There was drug testing even in the 70s.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was, yeah. I believe people were failing for, like, amphetamines and stuff in the early 70s, yeah.
But it was light. It was very light drug testing.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where, like, you take 2 weeks off of your D-ball and you're probably good.
This is actually the time that Jason Blaha is referring to where it was easy to beat drug tests, or it was just an IQ test. You just need a calendar.
Well, the CIA sent him back in time probably for that.
So our free-for-all era, this is, I mean, how many of the best lifters, the strongest lifters of all time, we have chosen for this era?
So many. There were so many. This is like the greatest time in power sports too. I mean, up till 88, 1988 was really the pinnacle of all power sports.
I think
we agree on that.
The peak of power.
Yeah, but all the best lifters there for sure. I mean, you had the Bulgarians were in full on Bulgarian mode. The Russians were going crazy. East Germany was in there in the mix. China wasn't really around yet. They were sort of starting to come out, so they didn't really there. But even the U.S. lifters, everybody was just, it was full steam ahead. So you had a solid, I mean, this is all the biggest records were broken then.
Yeah, so lifters or people we considered for this on the international side would be, you know, Jurek Vardanian, David Riegert.
Yeah. You'd have
Taranenko, Pistorenko.
Taranenko, Pisarenko, Krostev, basically the entire Bulgarian team, you know, so many huge, huge names in this. I mean, everybody, anyone you can think of. Kropoti is for Kazakhstan. You had, you know, Zlatev as a Bulgarian. I mean, all these guys lifting numbers that were just insane.
But because the Mount Rushmore is about picking the person who is most iconic, who is most representative of that time,
who represents the free-for-all best?
There was only one who could represent this era on the international side, and that is Uncle Ivan.
Yeah.
Ivan Avajayev.
Yeah. He was, I mean, just the mastermind of the most successful weightlifting team in that, you know, probably in history. Well, pretty much in that time for sure. 57 world champions, 64 European champions, four bronze Olympic medalists, about 13 silver and a dozen gold medalists at the Olympics.
And I mean, you're talking. The whole team didn't leave the 88 Olympics.
Holy shit! They would have won every class.
Yeah,
yeah.
They'd already won two. So
he had basically at the 1988 Olympics, he had people that would have won almost every single class, basically every class they entered, and it was bigger teams back then. I believe it was six men. So he would have swept gold at that had they not all gotten yanked for some kind of diuretic. Obviously, depending on who you asked, yeah, maybe it was a setup, maybe it wasn't. Either way, he was churning out champions like, you know, like every single competition was owned by the Bulgarians.
And I think there's one story that comes to mind that you've told me that is most representative of Avajayev and this era, and that is day one.
So yeah, it was day one. You take one pill. Day two, one pill. Finish. Day two pill. Inside, but only one pill. So inside one pill. Day three pill. Out one, inside three. And just kept going. He literally kept going with the story for 20 or 30 pills. It was like...
And what day does this story end on?
40. Day 40.
40. 40 Diebel.
Just every
what,
day.
How many milligrams are we talking here?
They were 5-milligram pills, he said.
But this is pharmaceutical grade.
Yeah, this is good like stuff. Made in the actual place, yeah. They called it Bianabol, not Dianabol.
This is Bulgarian Dianabol?
That's the name they used, yeah.
Yeah. I think they've earned the right to have their own,
I believe so.
Their own signature steroid.
They really made the most of it. Yeah,
I could see that being a thing. It's, you know, NBA players have like their signature shoe, Air Jordans or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And 1980s weightlifters. I got my own signature drug. Yeah, yeah. This guy was taking.
Oh,
you
my
know,
god. Yeah.
Pistorenka drawl.
They had a thing where the story was that when no one had ever really taken drugs, this is years before, and so no one really knew what was going to happen, and they were all really scared. So everyone was like, well, I'll take like one during training, and then like I won't take it until like a couple of days later. And so people kind of got a little stronger, but not really. And then he told me, he's like, well, one guy, I'm not going to say his name, but one guy, he just started taking like a 5 of them every day. And we were like, you're going to die. Like, it's not good for you. And then he got really strong. And he started killing, like, smashing everybody. And then everybody was like, well, he's taking, I'm going to do it. And then that was probably the start of the arms race of taking as much possible performance-enhancing drugs as you can. So that's how it all began, kids.
All right, so we've got Uncle Ivan, the clear icon of... 1970s and 1980s weightlifting, a magical time.
Oh,
and then, you know, really, I've said this before, if you want to have a level playing field, the only way to do that is to tell people they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, that's true.
And the U.S., this was going on well in the U.S., so our U.S. representative for this era, the free-for-all era, is Mario Martinez. So, two-time Olympian.
Yeah, two-time Olympian.
Silver.
Silver in 1984 in LA.
Fourth in 88.
Yeah, so...
Super heavyweight lifter from your hood.
From the Bay Area, yeah. Trained with Jim Schmitz and American records. I believe he... may be incorrect, but I believe he was the first American to snatch 400... and clean and jerk 500 in a meet. And there really actually haven't been that many other Americans to do that. So he was...
Yeah, I want to say Kane was
Kane's done it.
Fourth or fifth, maybe.
Yeah, because it would have been Mario, Hammond, Kane,
Mark Henry,
and then
Casey Bergner. No.
Possibly Casey. I think he only did 224.
Okay.
So it might have been maybe like a Bruce Wilhelm or someone else in that area. But
well, if Bruce would have done it, he would have done it before Mario.
So. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. So I'm guessing it was probably, maybe it was only four.
Yeah.
But one of very few Americans to do that.
And I've heard that Mario Martinez is regarded as a technician.
he was some kind of technician. Yeah.
Poetry in motion.
Poetry in motion. The, John North may have been like, that's fucking solid. Cock those arms back, just pull it in. His arms would bend to like 90 degrees off the floor. And he was just so cock strong. Like, not a pretty lifter at all.
You know numbers, like squatting and pulling numbers for him?
I've asked. So Jim Schmitz told me that of the three strongest guys he's had, it was Ken Patera, Mario, and then Bruce Wilhelm. And in his words, Ken Patera was the physically strongest, and he was squatting 700 pounds. Bruce Wilhelm was the best athlete.
Yeah, phenomenal athlete.
But not as strong as the other two, and not as good a lifter. But Mario was the best weightlifter. So I don't remember exact numbers, but I know he was not a gigantic squatter. I don't think he was squatting in the like 750 range, probably like maybe 300 plus kilos, 300 kilos range. So not the super strongest. That's also saying, you know, had he tried some more training in that direction, he might have been way, way stronger, but yeah.
All right, so Mario Martinez. Any other Americans who come to mind for that era?
I would say Jeff Michaels is a good example. He was a 110, and he did a 188 snatch and I believe a 222 clean and jerk. He had an incredibly good snatch. 188 at 110 is fantastic.
Yeah, wow.
Amazing bottom position, just a very good competitor. And then you obviously got most of the lifters then were pretty solid, but I say those two are the biggest standouts of that era.
All right, so the next era we're talking about, this is from the early 90s to maybe retroactively, let's say it's until 2008.
Yeah.
It is up until 2008. And we're going to call this the crackdown asterisk era. And I think this was a time in, you know, where the IOC started to see things that were like, fuck, we can't have this many people testing positive and it can't be so blatant.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to maybe cause a divergence here in our two Mount Rushmores between international weightlifting, which is the crackdown asterisk era, and I think U.S. weightlifting, which is a bit more of a real,
crackdown
era at this point, where the international lifters, they just had to get... They had to try harder to beat the tests, and most of the time they succeeded in that. And American weightlifting, we could call this maybe like the "come on, guys" era.
Where, wait, are you guys still doing drugs?
Yeah, where America, everyone else started lifting way more than us, and it was like, "Come on, guys, like play fair."
Yeah, it was
like,
definitely the dark ages. Really, like late 90s through early 2000s was the dark ages for us in terms of watching the rest of the world just kind of take off. But early 90s, they restructured the weight classes, so they redid them just as they're doing now. So they're very familiar with that, which is surprising. You'd think they'd be faster at that process. They've done it a few times now.
You can figure it out in an afternoon, IWF. Fuck, come on.
So the whole 90s starts the restructuring. Then you've got, you know, kind of just the wall, the Berlin Wall comes down, all that stuff starts to fall apart. The Soviet Union comes, you know, breaks apart.
That had to be huge because through the last era, the free for all.
Oh.
I mean, Soviet Union had like five guys who could have been winning each weight class.
Yeah.
So and now all five of them get to go to the Olympics because they just go to different Soviet republics.
Just, yep. So everyone goes to a different place. The whole thing is falling apart. A lot of people probably, you know, coaches and whatnot were coming over to here, going other places. Also, con artists were coming over here saying they were coaches. there's just a lot of, like, the whole thing's kind of up in the air. It's still going. There's still weightlifting, obviously, the Olympics and Worlds and whatnot. But this era is probably really dominated by Naeem Suleimanoglu, right? The Pocket Hercules.
Pocket Hercules. And he had some overlap into the previous previous era. I mean, he started competing. He won his first Olympics at, what, 15?
No, so he won the 80. So he didn't go to 84 because that was L.A. They boycotted. So he was, I believe he was a third. He was bronze in the 1983 Worlds. And he was about 15 or 16. He broke his first senior American record at 15.
Senior world record,
at 15. He destroyed the American record. At 15, he did like a 160 weighing 56. Then...
Do you think he'd gone through puberty by the time he broke his first American record?
I think he was he was medically forced through puberty.
at like 8?
8 years old. Here, take these pills. Then he goes... Skips 84, but the consensus is that he would have won in 84. I mean, I think that's
Did
pretty...
Did he go to the Friendship Games?
He may have, yeah. I don't remember, actually. I'm sure he if he did go there, he probably won it.
I'll Google the Friendship Games while we talk.
84, didn't go to the Olympics. 88, went and basically put on a clinic for how to do weightlifting. Murdered every single competitor there, not literally, but with the barbell. 150.
Wait, stabbed him with the bar?
150 and a half snatch and a, or 152 and a half snatch?
Yes, he did
win. He won Friendship?
He won the Friendship Games, bantamweight, Naeem.
Right.
What was his total? It doesn't say.
Oh. So had he gone to the Olympics, he would have won that. That would have been gold medal number one. Goes to 88, wins that easily.
He did 170.5 clean and jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Which
so
was
he
above the world record.
Yeah. So he would have definitely won the 84 Olympics. 88, he won. 92, he won. 96, he won in a fantastic battle. If you have a chance to watch on YouTube, there's the Leonidas versus Suleimanoglu. There's a great Discovery Channel like documentary they made about that, which is just fantastic to watch. And then tried in 2000 to make a comeback and compete and bombed out at like a 145 snatch, which was, I think, even at the time, like way ahead of the second place. So like an unnecessarily heavy weight. But you got a three-time Olympic gold medalist, could have possibly been four. And the outside chance that had he chosen better selection of weights, five-time Olympic gold medalist in the same sport? That's never happened before.
Yeah, and definitely some strong contention for this spot, mostly by USA Weightlifting's Piros Dimas.
I was confused. Absolutely, but, Dimas. Three-time Olympic gold medalist, one-time bronze, and just all-around hilarious guy.
He is. You guys are buddies.
We're buddies. He's a great dude. Yeah, but I mean, again,
you guys, you and Piros have like a secret handshake or anything?
No, it's not.
Who do you like more, me or him?
I like you more. I like Chad more because when I talk to Chad, it's English. When I talk to Piros, it's not quite English.
You guys got to use hand motions and stuff?
It's almost English.
anyone else besides Piros that really jumps out as a...
Oh, Kashvili, his teammate, another guy. Three-time gold medalist, also super successful.
Okay, and then, he didn't have as good an agent as Dimas.
No, he didn't. No, he was not as marketable.
Is it because Dimas does the squat jerk?
They both did. Oh. They both did power jerks. I think it was one of those things where it's like, well, you got to go with one of them. So who are you going to go with? The guy that, you know, people more relatable, Dimas. He's got a great sense of humor.
He is. The very little time I get to interact with him.
He's very fun.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah.
We can get him on the podcast. So
we should. That would be good.
I'm going to get that little Dimas mini documentary.
That would be cool.
In the works. As my main interaction with Dimas was last year's Nationals, getting that picture, Demas and Ed Cohen.
Yeah.
And they, like, shook hands, and there was a fucking supernova that came off there.
Explosion of horse, yeah. Of manliness and power. Do you think Demas knew who Cohen was?
It definitely seemed like it.
Yeah, I felt like it was.
That neither of them had ever met.
Yeah.
But they were like, oh, you are me in the other side of things.
Yeah. It really is. You have the Demas of weightlifting and the Demas of powerlifting. Yeah, the Ed Cohen of weightlifting and the Ed Cohen of powerlifting.
Yeah. And yeah, that was cool, but
that was definitely a very that was a really cool experience, you know, to see those two guys shake hands.
I mean, Ed had to alpha him a little bit with his giant hands.
Yeah, of course he does. That's Ed's move. Ed's go-to move is to just engulf your hand with his.
What's he supposed to do?
What else can he do?
He's 5'6" with the hands of a 6'6" person and the arms of a 6'6". I always maintain that Ed Cohen was supposed to be like 6'1", 315.
Yeah.
And they pulled a Cotton Hill on him.
Cotton Hill.
They chopped 3 inches out of his lumbar spine and 3 inches out of his femur. So instead of 6'1", he was 5'6".
And then they sewed his lats to his pelvis, to like the bottom of his pelvis.
That's because they cut out his lumbar.
It just goes down there.
Yeah.
It's
like he has a spinal fusion down there.
They just knocked him out. He's ridiculous build.
Yeah. So
terrible body for weightlifting, though. I don't think he would have been a good lifter. Those monkey arms.
What did he tell us? He muscle snatched like 130.
Yeah, he muscle snatched 130 just trying it. So fuck him.
Is this how you do it? I mean, how could you not?
Oh my god.
So Naeem on the international side, and yeah, we're calling that the crackdown asterisk era. And on the U.S. side, I think a bit of a more legitimate crackdown, and we'll call that the come on guys era, and in which the U.S. stopped taking drugs largely, probably, while everyone else continued. And you know, an iconic guy in this time was for sure Mark Henry, early in that, the first kind of American or first weightlifting personality I was aware of was Mark Henry, and seeing him on NBC, two-hand dunk a basketball.
I remember that one. Yeah, I saw that too.
You know, Wes Barnett, an incredible lifter, you know, still holding American records to this day.
Yeah.
From that time period, but our pick for the crackdown, or sorry, the come on guys era of American weightlifting is Shane Haymon.
Yeah.
And yeah, Shane was a powerlifter like Mark Henry. You know, powerlifter that crossed over to weightlifting, you know, got really featured a lot in different commercials and everything. Had that crazy goatee kind of going on.
He had still holds the American records, all three of them, snatch, clean and jerk, and total. He had a 197.5 snatch, which is insane. I mean, almost a 200-kilo snatch, drug-free. 237 clean and jerk, which is also insane. And they were, the lifts weren't like, if you watch his list, which you should after this if you haven't,
and watch his squats.
Yeah, it's not like they were.
And watch his backflip video.
Everything was fast as shit. Everything was just incredibly strong. His cleans were just a joke. I think he could have been, had he found Olympic lifting early on, or you know, had that like been cultivated a little bit different way, not that he did a bad job, but you know, had maybe he had a different opportunity, he may have been a 250 plus clean and jerker. Maybe,
you know, and I did an interview with Shane like 5 years ago now.
Oh yeah.
And he talked about how when he came in from powerlifting, he'd squatted 1,014 in single ply. He was insanely strong in the squat. He was built to squat. He was 5'8", 360 pounds.
Yeah.
And that he was so strong that when he came, they were like, you don't need to squat anymore because you're so strong, you're stronger than the other lifters. And he talked about being at these meets and seeing guys squat in the training hall and stuff. And he's like, I wasn't stronger than them, or wasn't that much. So he basically moved away from his strength, which was his strength. and that seemed to be his one big regret of his weightlifting career.
I could see that, yeah. I heard stories where he didn't go, they wouldn't let him go real heavy on squats. And, you know, I think there's a huge thing to say too for people like that. Like, if that's where you're naturally at, like, you got to have some maintenance of that. You don't want to start losing strength or feel like you're losing it, you know. And I don't think,
yeah,
in his
from a
case,
psychological,
yeah,
standpoint,
it's going to make you feel awkward. You know, it's going to be hard to do that. So, but super, super solid performances, really great. The best super we've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, if we had to pick the most success or the best American weightlifter ever, I mean, he's still got the records. Like,
His records are close to others too. His records are very, up until recently, his records were close. I mean, 197 was only, you know, 17 kilos away, 15 kilos away. From the snatch world record.
Yeah, and there's no one. Every other American record is either being challenged by people or broken by people in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah,
and no one's even touching that snatch record.
No, that is such a big number.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they haven't. No one's come within 5 kilos of an attempt.
Yeah,
of it.
I mean, no, I don't think anyone's even tried 190 since Hammond.
Yeah,
it's definitely not happening.
So our Crackdown, Asterisk, and Come On Guys era Mount Rushmore representatives are Naeem Soleimani and Shane Haman. So our next era is women's weightlifting. Women's weightlifting as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, it's in an interesting spot because while men's weightlifting was going from the early 1900s, women's weightlifting, you know, the 80s?
Yeah, it was. So the first, I want to say the first world championships was probably took place 83.
Well, I thought it was 87.
Maybe the first world championship was 87. Yeah. First American championship was 83.
Yeah.
But those were, you know, there's a YouTube video of one of the first women's world championships, and it was definitely not the same. Nobody took it seriously at that point. At least outside of the women competing, you know, it was like, it was just a very different kind of event. You know, it was sort of like Eastern, the European nations were not like jumping on this, like, oh, let's make a women's team. The American women were very much pushing for this to happen. There was a lot more coming from us to make it a thing. And you know, eventually, obviously they had a world championships, but, that era was a very slow start. Women's weightlifting wasn't even in the Olympics till 2000. And, you know, it was all like, I want to say, it wouldn't have happened without certain key people, like John Coffey, getting people to meets, facilitating meets, arguing to have people lift, letting people compete. So, you know, it wasn't like a quickly embraced, everyone jump in, let's do women's weightlifting. So a different era, obviously.
Yeah. And I think, and this is an audible on the fly here, I think for American women's weightlifting, that John Coffey, honestly,
yeah, possibly, yeah,
should be the Mount
Rushmore. That's actually, yeah, a man.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man did it, but I don't know. I'm kidding.
I do think that's actually, I do think John Coffey, Jim Schmitz, like not to take away from the women, but these were people that were. You know, I mean, John Coffey was making it happen. He was there making sure that women were getting to competitions, that competitions were happening. Not to say that, you know, had there been no women competing, then, you know, I wouldn't have done anything. But I think he was instrumental in helping facilitate that.
Yeah.
From a lifter's perspective, I think, you know, you have a ton of women that were pioneers in it. A lot of women from the Bay Area, Giselle Shepetin, Susan Silverman was there. Just a lot of girls there. You had Karen Marshall, but I think overall.
Yeah, you know, people that we debated about for this spot before, really just hearing Max talk about John Coffey there, I was like, John Coffey kind of.
Yeah.
It was the umbrella that a lot of these women would have been under. It was Robin Goad, Cheryl Hayworth, Tara Knott.
Yeah.
And even, you know, current American women's weightlifters who are pushing things to the next level, Sarah Robles, Maddie Rogers, you know, in a lot of ways, Maddie's maybe the most well-known weightlifter in the world. women's weightlifting, and our team is mostly women, and they we're happy about that all the time because they work their ass off. They're pushing the sport so rapidly. It's exciting that there's like so many girls who are chasing and pushing these records. And if you look 3 years ago, 5 years ago, what was winning nationals now,
oh man,
maybe gets you eighth place, and the depth of talent is great, and CrossFit's been a huge boom for that. And
for sure, yeah, definitely, it's definitely a different. I mean, the women's era is today. I mean, this is it. This is weightlifting is probably going to survive on the women participating more so than the men, is my guess.
Yeah, and for our international women's Mount Rushmore representative. Be a weird looking face because it's country shaped. It's a country shaped face. is China. Chinese women's weightlifting are so much better than everyone else. We can't pick a person for it. And to be honest, we actually had a hard time naming a single Chinese women's weightlifter. We just know that when you go down the world records list, it's China, 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 China. And prior to, you know, in the first iteration of women's weightlifting, the first weight class structure, China had every single world record.
Yeah.
I think maybe besides one single lift world record. They had 95-99% of all the world records were owned by one country.
They just dominate. I mean, they've broken more world records than all the other nations combined. They're just Chinese weightlifting or Chinese women's weightlifting is the most prolific weightlifting there is. They are the best at weightlifting, including men. They're just so fucking dominant.
Yeah.
It's not even funny. I mean, it's just everything.
Yeah. So they've broken more world records than all other countries in women's weightlifting combined.
Yeah.
Over 500 world records.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. And it's from the smallest weight class through the supers.
Yeah.
Everything.
I would say the only one honorable, not only one, but an honorable mention would probably go to the Russian lady, Tatiana Kasharina, simply because she was so far ahead of everybody else. But her distance from the next competitor is the same as all of China from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's that era. That's the women's era, and that brings us to the modern era of weightlifting, which we're saying is 2008 on, and this is a time of, you know, whether it started in 2008 or last year, of serious drug testing, retroactive drug testing. OC cracking down on the IWF and that, you know, changing everything. Also changing everything in that time was social media.
Yeah.
And Americans and CrossFit and Nat Arum at Hook Grip being able to make, you know, this new world of people interested in weightlifting and make them aware of international lifters and make these international lifters icons. And I think on the international side, there was maybe three lifters who were, you know, kind of stand out above everyone else. And I think that's Liu Zhaojun, Dmitry Klokov. Well, I flipped him off accidentally there as I was counting down. Liu Zhaojun, Dmitry Klokov, and our representative on the...
Diane Fu.
On Mount Rushmore. The Fridge, Ilya Ilyin.
Yeah.
And... you know, in a lot of ways, he's representative of this era, not just from massive lifts and world records and gold medals and world championships, but also from retroactive drug testing, two positives, also from YouTube and Instagram and coming to America to do seminars. You know, he kind of did all the parts that...
Did you see his most recent Instagram video?
I have not.
Booty shorts now.
Oh.
He's wearing booty shorts.
Anything for the likes. Anything for the likes.
He's really going hard into the... He's leaning hard into that Instagram fame, I think. Once you put the booty shorts on...
And his English is good now, right?
I don't know. I imagine so. He came here for English. I mean... I haven't talked to him recently, so I can't say.
And Ilya is going to be an incredibly interesting part of weightlifting going forward, because it's going to, his specific situation, this kind of weird loophole he's squeaking through, that two retroactive positives, because he didn't know about the first one when they gave him the second one, because they're basically simultaneous.
Yeah.
Is going to allow him to come back to weightlifting, and we get to see what he's going to do.
Well, the question really is, how does he lift? If he comes back and he does 175, 210, or, something in that equivalent, like, clearly he's not, on drugs or as much, and he wins, does he recapture the people's hearts? Or does he come back and do, 200, 250, and still recapture people's hearts, but also at the same time, everyone's just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of a tricky place as a fan of weightlifting and a fan of Ilya, because he's a nice guy that we get to hang out with at a seminar. And, you can tell he's having fun. He loves what he's doing. He loves lifting weights. And it will be interesting to see. Yeah. I think it's going to be very telling for the future of weightlifting what his return performance is.
He'll be the barometer, right? Because whatever his performance is an indicator as to what we're doing in the next generation here, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just an overall exciting time for weightlifting, and social media probably creating the biggest change in that. On the American side of things, several different people that we considered, but I think because he's gone to every Olympics in the era that we're talking about, Kendrick Ferris is the American representative here. Three-time Olympian. There's very few people in the world who get to say that.
Yeah.
And, he's been very measured and kind of precise in his approach to that.
Yeah,
and
he had a strategy and he executed, and it got him to Olympics three times, which is hard to say for a lot of people. I think he was fortunate enough that he was ahead of everybody for the most part up until the last time he had to fight, I think, a lot harder to get that spot. But, he put himself in position by being stronger than his competitors to score the points he needed and lock in his position based on the rules, and so well done to him for making three Olympics and Kyle Pierce, right? So.
Yeah. Any other Americans who really come to mind as...
I would say the only other ones are really, Chad Vaughn was in there. He was a two-time Olympian. I don't know if he was just more overshadowed by Kendrick at the time, and that may be not why he's as super obvious a choice. And then potentially the other folks, I would say you maybe got Goff in the late 90s, you got Barnett, those guys, but they're really kind of earlier than that.
What about any coaches or even... I could see, Phil Andrews being...
Yeah, Phil Andrews actually would probably be... I would say Phil Andrews might actually be a better figurehead for that, because Phil Andrews took it from being in the Skate Town USA, national championships in a roller rink, on the roller rink, next to the ski ball, to the venues we have now, which are just incredible. So I would say that, Phil Andrews, that's actually probably, he might be a better example of that era because he's moving it forward.
Can we put CrossFit as the...
Greg Glassman's face on there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's another, he might be a different Mount Rushmore. He might be a different Mount Rushmore. Maybe you have like a Mount Rushmore that's got, you got Abhijeev, you got Phil Andrews, you got Greg Glassman. A very different group.
No one's going to that mountain. That's an ugly, ass mountain.
Not a pretty mountain to look at.
I'm going to just put the CrossFit logo up there instead.
Generic CrossFitter woman image on there instead.
Yeah. We picked a man, John Coffey, for the women's representative.
We've fallen far from where we could have been on this. I do think that's a good pick, though. I really think that's a... He was iconic in what he did,
Oh yeah, I agree, and he's representative of many,
yeah,
of many, many people there. So that's it. That's our Mount Rushmore of weightlifting. Again, we're trying to define this era by era. So before you comment, actually pay attention to the eras and don't just go on there and tell us like, oh yeah, you know, well why wasn't Clarence Kennedy and Girth Brooks on your thing? Well, like,
they don't do competitions.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
not weightlifters.
The we had Tommy Kono, the representative for both sides in the old time era, going up until about 1960 from the start of formal competitive weightlifting. In the three lift era, on the international side was Vasily Alexeyev. For America was Joe Doobie. The free for all era, Ivan Abajayev, Bulgarian, infamous, notorious coach. Was our icon for that part of things. Mario Martinez, two-time Olympian, silver medalist in 84 on things for on that side for the U.S. In the crackdown asterisk era, was a very competitive race between Naeem and Piros, but we'll put Naeem Suleimani on the Mount Rushmore for the international side, and the come on guys side for the U.S. will be Shane Haymon. For women's weightlifting, China, just the whole country, all of their incredible, insane, dominant women's weightlifters are going to represent for things there. And on the women's weightlifting side for the U.S., John Coffey. You know, there was a lot of good, great women's lifters that we could have put there.
Maybe yeah. Coffey's Gym is a better representation.
That is probably better.
Let's say that.
It's Coffey's Gym, but you know, John Coffey with coaching athletes like Robin Goad. You know, we also want to highlight, you know, Cheryl Hayworth, Sarah Robles, Tara Knott, Maddie Rogers, all these people that are pushing, you know, that made women's weightlifting possible in the U.S. and are pushing it further and further every day. And then finally, in the modern era of weightlifting, Ilya Ilyin, our international representative, and then for the U.S., Kendrick Ferris. You know, go in the comments, let us know your picks, era by era.
Yeah.
Not just five people from the free-for-all era. We know that there was a shitload of awesome lifters there, but you got to go with the era thing.
Do it right.
Yeah.
Do it right, people.
Yeah. And, that's another episode of Beers with Chad. It's a bonus episode to The Jug Life. Go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice, subscribe to the YouTube. 3+ videos per week from the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. We're trying to do podcast, strength history minute, a powerlifting video, a weightlifting video, maybe a Jug Life highlight, or a Beers with Chad video on there every week. So subscribe, share the videos with your friends. JuggernautCoaching.com for all your powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, and power building coaching needs. You can follow this guy, Max_Ada, on Instagram, or email him at max@jtsstrength.com. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining. This was Beers with Chad. Cheers. We'll see you next week.